Well, we're talking onset dementia amongst our rugby players, our top rugby players. Carl Heyman has recently come out to talk about his onset early dementia, a result of injuries sustained during his first class career. Of course, he is All Black prop, 45 tests. How prevalent is it amongst our top players? Of course, the person that should know all about this, well, how prevalent it is amongst our rugby players for sure, is Sir Wayne Buck-Shelford, and he joins us now. Me tuku mihi kia koe, Sir Wayne. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on Irirangi Wātea.
Kia ora, Claudette. Thank you for having me. Great honour.
Before we start, I haven't had an opportunity to say congratulations to you on your knighthood. Very well deserved. Sir Wayne, wonderful. Do you like being called Sir Wayne?
Well, in the area that I am, you know, with being closed down with COVID over the last, you know, few months, it's me staying at home and don't get out too much, and most of the people in the area know me anyway. So it's actually pretty, you know, pretty quiet at the moment. So once we get back into the you know, level two, it'll be a bit different when I can get across the borders and get out of Auckland.
Yeah. So we've got a really important kaupapa here, and it's about head injuries amongst our first-class rugby players, or just head injuries generally with our rugby players. And, you know, it's really great to see and hear some of our top-class players, our former players, coming out to talk about their issues around head injuries, onset, whether it's onset early dementia or whether it's just head trauma. Really good to highlight that, to make it easy for other players who are experiencing the same thing to also speak out and also seek assistance. With that in mind, because we don't talk about it very much, I'm just wondering, do you know how prevalent it is amongst our top class players?
No, I don't, but I know it's there, and it has been around for quite some time now. And I think that, you know, going back probably 8 or 9 years now, that's when I first started hearing about it in a bigger way, when we got all that information from the United States and in regards to the NFL players actually, you know, getting really bad head injuries and at the end of their careers and then committing suicide and all those sorts of things. So it's one of those things that it's been around for a while now, and over the last few years, I know that there's been a big push by the NZRU to actually, I've got sunlight in the way, so I'll just move my screen. Oh, that's worse. Hang on, excuse me. But notwithstanding that, it is getting bigger and bigger. It's been recognised by a lot of people now.
I guess before we get to a stage where it becomes a very big issue, minimising the risks of having this develop amongst our players would be one step of, you know, minimising the risk. That would be up to the rugby union, sports generally. Are there enough measures, or is there enough mahi being done to minimise the risk of these head injuries, these types of head injuries that can lead to long-term trauma? Or is it something that perhaps rugby may not want to deal with because it may take away some of the nuances of rugby that we're used to seeing?
Well, it's one of those things that I believe that most of the coaches today that I know of that are coaching at club rugby level, which is senior rugby, not, you know, you're talking about under 20s and then right up to senior level at club rugby, many of our coaches today are very, very, they know about it, and they will not let players back on the rugby field if they've had injuries. They have to be, they have to go to the doctor and get checked before they actually come back to play the game again. And that way there, it covers you. And I think within my club alone, we're very, very hard on the players in regards to their health and safety, because we are interested in their health and safety, and the head injuries is a big one. A lot of players don't want to leave the field. They feel like they're letting the team down when they get told that they can't carry on because they don't pass the test. But that's us looking after them, and I think that we are doing those sort of things now. more regular, and for any little head knock, they get tested, and if they don't pass the test, they actually get stood down for 3 or 4 weeks until they get cleared again. So we are doing it at club level, and I think it's at the highest level of the professional game. It's being done all the time with the players. But I have to say that when I was in my day, you know, it's going back a few years now. I haven't played for a long time, a long time. And so the thing is, we really knew nothing about this. And we were going to get put back on there by our coaches, other players, saying, no, Buck, you've got to stay on. You've got to stay on, all those sorts of things. And so you just stayed on. You'd done it because you knew nothing else. But today, there's so much more awareness in regards to head injuries that you'd be a fool to actually allow somebody to stay on the field and years later come back to actually haunt you. Because, you know, we're actually, as coaches, we're at the, we steer the team around trainings, and we've got to make our trainings as safe as we can to make sure our people don't get hurt at training as well. Because we train twice a week, but our pros train an awful lot longer than what we do. And no doubt that they would have the same sort of facility there that they actually train. And if somebody gets hurt, they'll go to the side, get seen by a doctor, do the test, and if they don't pass it, they don't train anymore. So we're all aware of it, and we know that. I feel very sorry for the young man who's just being diagnosed with dementia. And at the age of 41, that's really young. And we just have to be very careful, I think. And there's no real testing regime in the amateur levels yet. But I think there's going to be something rolled out in the next year or two. So out to the clubs so they can have their own HIA as well. And I think we've just got to change the environment of the past. So the environment was, come on, man, just get hard and all those sorts of things. Well, it's not that about anymore. It's about your long-term health and safety for your future as an adult going into later life, because a lot of people don't get diagnosed until later in life. And so that's the sad point of fact, that this diagnosis really can only be diagnosed after you've passed away. And then they can get and operate on you, take your brain, and basically find out what was going wrong with you. And there was, back in the early days, a lot of people talking about, oh, just exactly the same as dementia, all those sort of things. But a lot of the written material that I've seen, it's not. It's quite different. It's a beast on its own, and it attributes to the heavy knocks taking in rugby. And it's that continual being knocked around and your brain being shaken within its within the skull. So it's, you know, it's a new thing on the block for many people, many coaches, and there are a lot of things that are happening within the young game in regards to using flags now, playing tag rather than full-time rugby at a younger age. And there's been even talk of actually starting the tackle game in their teens rather than start at a younger age, which is good. You know, I think it's a good
part of it. One of the issues that Carl Heyman brought up was around his professional days internationally, and he did say that there was pressure on him to stay on the field, and that expectation was based on the salary that he was receiving. So while there does seem to be a desire by clubs around the world to want to address this issue, actually it might be inconsistent, and that money does have a huge influence on whether or not that player is made to stay on, or whether that player feels they should stay on the field. So do you think that there should be some consistent policy internationally when it comes to head trauma?
Well, that's really hard thing to look at, because, you know, I'm not in that world. I'm not in the professional world. And Carl has been in the professional world for a long, long time. So from the time that he actually left New Zealand rugby, been playing professional ball overseas in Europe somewhere, and played a lot of rugby over there. And when they're paying you big money, they expect their pound of flesh out of you. Every game, get out there and do your job. This is what you're getting paid for. And I think that once, you know, it's got to be written in concrete within contracts in regards to your health and well-being, in regards to your, when you sign the line, you need to sign something which basically says that, or they need to sign it as well, that if you have any head trauma in the game, you get diagnosed with an HIA and you do not go back on the field, all those sorts of things. They need to be in the contracts. Otherwise, the overseas owners will just chuck them out on the field. Get out there. You know, you're all right. You'll be all right, you know. But they've got to be old school to do that now. You know, New Zealand,
in terms of our rangatahi, Sir Wayne, and our rangatahi at high schools, as an example, if we're talking in the olden days, in my day, at high school, at Mount Roskill Grammar, the front row would probably be the half the weight of one prop in secondary school's team today. So they've gotten bigger and they've gotten heavier, and I would say that the crunch of those front rows when they pack down is phenomenal. That's where it starts as well too. I mean, that heavy banging together, it's all relative, I guess, you know, whether you are a 10-year-old or whether you're at high school. But we are getting bigger, and that packing down and, you know, front row knock is just extraordinary.
Well, I don't think you can divorce it from, you know, for a head injury at high school rugby or even lower. You cannot divorce it from the professional game. We're under the same rules, especially when it comes to injuries, and head injuries is the main one. You know, if you break your leg, well, you're not going to be playing for 6 or 7 weeks because you're going to be in plaster. If we have an operation on something else, you know, you're going to be in plaster or whatever. But when it comes to head injury, they can't see it. So some coaches, some parents just want to push their kids back out on the field because they want success for them. But the thing is, you know, is that they're trying to take success over the person's health and well-being more than anything else. That's what they're doing. And I would say to any parent, when it comes to any type of head injury, make sure your child gets tested for concussion, and he cannot play. Even if a coach wants him to play, the parent's got the right to say no, he does not play if he's being tested by a doctor. And I just think it's a no-brainer that we have to look after our youth of today for the future of the game. If we don't, well, the game is going to lose a lot of people to it because of not looking after them when they're young.
Also too, given that, okay, so I'm going to make a generalised statement here, not unusual, but given that a significant number of our Māori and Pacifica players are front row, and would we then say that we could expect that there would be a significant number of head trauma amongst our whānau, Māori and Pacifica, because of the positions that they play, they are more likely to experience that?
Yeah, I think they would. I think, you know, many of our front rowers are, you know, a big Māori, Polynesian boys. It's not just about the front row. It's the high impact areas in the tackle zone. You know, being even when you're a tackler, you can actually get hit in the head. And if you hit somebody's hip, the hip is a very hard place to hit. And, you know, if you go around the legs and do a clean tackle, the chances are you won't get hurt. But we're going to – there's so many contact areas in the game of rugby. You just got to be mindful of your head all the time in the tackle zone, whether you're running with the ball, whether you're actually taking a tackle with the ball. So, and landing on the ground, when we're going into tackles, you know, we see a lot of really big hits when two players go to tackle – one person and they collide their heads together. You know, it's exactly the same of hitting somebody on the hip, in the head, all those sorts of things. It can turn out to be a light concussion, but light concussions, apparently, what I've learned is they just build up and build up and build up. They don't go away. They take a long, long time to go away.
And another generalisation, I know it is, but again, if we are experiencing perhaps drug and alcohol issues with some of our players, would we think more laterally about what is affecting them? Could it be that they might be experiencing some kind of other trauma to do with the high impact of their sport, as opposed to that player's a bit of a pisshead?
Well, you know, I don't see it in my club, and because I've been back at club rugby now for a good 15, 16 years. And, you know, we have a good blend of young 18-year-olds coming into the club, and we talk to them about head issues, all that sort of stuff. And many of them are on the right wavelength. They all want their health and safety as the first issue. And so in my club alone, you know, I can't talk for other clubs because I don't coach there. And so all of these young kids, it's all about health and safety as well. And we do our utmost to make sure that our techniques that we coach with, and no child is actually sent back out on the field if he doesn't want to go out there. And so that's coming from me as the president of the North Shore Rugby Club. But I can't say that for every other club. There are coaches out there that will push their players back out because they want to win. And, you know, I don't think winning rugby is the – we want, love winning, but we want to have our boys at the end of their rugby careers to be healthy as well.